Mr. President, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, it is unusual for a member of the philanthropic sector to be given the opportunity to address heads of state here at the United Nations. I'm honored by it, and I'm also encouraged. I see it as a sign of partnership that the world understands that no sector acting alone can achieve the goals for humanity that are the mission of the United Nations. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. Today, the greatest risk of global catastrophe doesn't look like this. Instead, it looks like this. If anything kills over 10 million people in the next few decades, it's most likely to be a highly infectious virus.
I think an epidemic, either naturally caused or intentionally caused, is the most likely thing to cause, say, 10 million excess deaths. Some epidemics, like a flu epidemic, could be absolutely gigantic. The impact of a huge epidemic, like a flu epidemic, would be phenomenal because all the supply chains would break down, there'd be a lot of panic, many of our systems would be overloaded.
The failure to prepare could allow the next epidemic to be dramatically more devastating than Ebola. But in fact, we can build a really good response system. We have the benefits of all the science and technology that we talk about here. We've got cell phones to get information from the public and get information out to them. We have satellite maps where we can see where people are and where they're moving. So we can have tools, but those tools need to be put into an overall global health system, and we need preparedness. The best lessons, I think, on how to get prepared are, again, what we do for war. For soldiers, we have full-time waiting to go. We have reserves that can scale us up to large numbers. We don't need to invest nearly what we do in military preparedness. This is something where less than $1 billion a year on R&D, medical surveillance, standby personnel, cross-training the military so they can play a role in terms of all the logistics. And then we need to pair those medical people with the military, taking advantage of the military's ability to move fast, do logistics, and secure areas.
You launched CEPI because you believe the world is unprepared for the next pandemic. What is CEPI?
CEPI is a coalition for epidemic preparedness. And the idea is to take a new way of building vaccines that could let us develop in less than a year a novel vaccine. They're called DNA RNA vaccines, and so we'll fund a few projects to build specific vaccines, but not only will we get that, we'll prove out that these platforms can work, we'll understand the regulatory issues, and it gives us a chance of being able to respond in time when the next epidemic hits. We need vaccines for a lot of things, not just epidemics. We need a HIV vaccine, a tuberculosis vaccine, a malaria vaccine. All of those things are in the works, and you know, over the next decade, I think most of those we'll get solutions for.
So those are the kinds of things we need to deal with an epidemic. But in fact, we can build a really good response system. We have the benefits of all the science and technology that we talk about here. We've got cell phones to get information from the public and get information out to them. We have satellite maps where we can see where people are and where they're moving.
Israel has given its security agencies the power to track the mobile data of people suspected of having the virus. The government will use the information to force them into quarantine and warn those who've come into contact with them. South Korea's taken similar steps by using mobile phone and satellite technology to track potential carriers.
The use of tech surveillance has been increasing due to the COVID-19 pandemic across the globe. Several governments have taken to tracking location data via mobile carriers to check if patients who should be isolated are staying isolated, as well as tracking how well their stay-at-home or quarantine orders are holding up. Carriers in Italy, Germany, and Austria within the European Union are continuously sharing data with health authorities. According to law enforcement in Italy, movement is down by 60% in one coronavirus hotbed. Now, Israel has also authorized location tracking for patients who have tested positive and should be under quarantine during the hopefully limited time of this pandemic. But these are not the only countries using cell phone location data, with Iran using an app called AC-19 to China's tracking and Taiwan's electronic fencing of their quarantined people.
The U.S. is tracking people's movements with phone data, and it's part of a massive increase in global surveillance. And it goes on to talk about governments across the world galvanizing every surveillance tool at their disposal to help stem the spread of the novel coronavirus.
Poland is taking a different approach. In order to ensure people are quarantining themselves correctly, they use something called the Home Quarantine app to make people register a selfie, then periodically send new selfies through the app or face a police report. And each of those selfies has location information in place. If they do not download and use the app, they may receive unexpected visits from police.
Last week, a top WHO, World Health Organization official stated that it's time for authorities to come to your home to see who's infected and take them away.
They're using apps now to do that. They're testing apps, but that they didn't do it with apps in Singapore. They did that with community workers, with public health workers, visiting the houses, checking on people, checking their health status every day and saying, how are you? Have you got a fever? Have you got a cough? And if a contact has developed a cough or a fever, they were taken immediately for testing. And at the moment, in most parts of the world, due to lockdown, most of the transmission that's actually happening in many countries now is happening in the household, at family level. In some senses, transmission has been taken off the streets and pushed back into family units. Now we need to go and look in families to find those people who may be sick and remove them and isolate them in a safe and dignified manner.
But what about the new surveillance techniques introduced to curb the spread? In Hangzhou, to enter a tower block, you need to have your temperature taken and registered. And you must have an app on your phone into which you input your name, temperature, recent travel and ID number. The information generates a color code. But few know exactly how their data is being used.
We actually looked at the back-end code that the app was running. And what you could see is the moment that a user gives it permission to access data, it immediately sends a function that says report info and location to police. And then we looked into it, and the police were a key developer of the product as well. And so from that, you can tell that the data is basically being sent back to the police the moment somebody actually uses the app.
In some 200 Chinese cities, you now need a green code to get on public transport. Without it, you can do almost nothing. No crisis should go to waste. The coronavirus has given the Chinese Communist Party an opportunity to increase state surveillance, knowing that most people will be more worried about the epidemic than their privacy.
Yes, this is happening in the very model for the New World Order system, as described by Rockefeller and others, George Soros and others who have described China as the heart or the engine of the New World Order on numerous occasions. It is held up as the model because this is exactly what the globalists want to enact in every country around the globe, a complete authoritarian regime that has total control, total surveillance over every aspect of its citizens' lives. That is the end goal.
The best lessons, I think, on how to get prepared are, again, what we do for war.
we must declare war on this virus. And that means countries have a responsibility to gear up, step up, and scale up.
We're at war. In a true sense, we're at war. And we're fighting an invisible enemy.
This is like a war. And in a war, you do whatever is needed to be done to take care of your people.
This is, in effect, a government on a wartime footing. A government calling for a collective national effort. As Boris Johnson would do, quotes, whatever it takes.
We must act like any wartime government.
Well, I think that the threat is very significant. The potential of the virus, it's already demonstrated in China. I mean, I don't think it's a crazy analogy to compare this to World War II.
Cross-training the military so they can play a role in terms of all the logistics, taking advantage of the military's ability to move fast, do logistics, and secure areas.
As the U.S. confirms, it's deploying new military resources to treat patients with COVID-19.
We went inside that new hospital at the Javits Convention Center with Army Chief of Staff General James C. McConville.
Messieurs, en direct de Charenton tout de suite. Si on ne dit pas qu'on se prépare à être un confiné, l'arzise.
The idea is to take a new way of building vaccines that could let us develop in less than a year a novel vaccine. They're called DNA RNA vaccines.
When will a corona vaccine be ready? A vaccine that enables us to resume our lives without restrictions while protecting us from the disease. I'm afraid we need to be patient and keep our distance for a while longer and let scientists do their job.
In the race for a coronavirus vaccine, some scientists are focusing on the development of vaccines based on messenger RNA, or mRNA. This involves injecting a person with the instructions for part of the virus. This would then spur the body to partially produce the virus. This, in turn, encourages the immune system to develop antibodies. Then, if the real coronavirus strikes, the person would be well equipped and able to defend himself or herself. Whether that will really work is what's being tested with the tools being developed here.
Scientists at the National Institutes of Health are working to create a vaccine for the new coronavirus that originated in China. But they're not starting from scratch. They're employing an approach called vaccine rapid response platforms.
It involves high-tech methods that have the potential to shave years off of development time. Ideally, they'd offer protection while an epidemic was still spreading, instead of years later.
Within weeks of the world learning about the Wuhan outbreak, Chinese scientists uploaded the novel coronavirus's genetic sequence to a public database that allowed teams around the world to start designing a vaccine. Traditional methods require an actual sample of the virus. Typically, scientists inactivate a virus using special chemicals before it's put into a vaccine. When the inactivated or weakened virus is injected into the body, The immune system recognizes it as a foreign invader or an antigen. Vaccines use antigens to prime the body to protect against a particular virus. But vaccines developed with rapid response platforms work differently. Rather than directly injecting antigens into the body, these types of vaccines typically send instructions to cells in the body. It gets the cells to produce antigen proteins that are specific to the virus it's designed to defeat. These instructions are in the form of RNA or DNA, the molecules that contain the code for building proteins. Scientists say this process cuts down on development time because they don't have to grow the whole virus. Plus, when scientists identify and create the instructions for one virus, they can tweak those instructions to make a vaccine for a similar virus.
Here's Tony Fauci talking about how excited he is at the speed with which we can create a vaccine that, remember, in animal studies, the warning was, be very careful about taking this to human trials. Listen to this.
One of these vaccines, I think, serves as the prototype of the timing of what we were talking about. You might recall I had mentioned that from the time we had available sequence, we would hope to be in clinical trials within 2 to 3 months. And I said, barring any glitches, that would be the fastest ever in any vaccine that we've gone from the identification of a pathogen to putting it into a human in a phase one trial. Well, I'm happy to report to you this afternoon that we are on time at least, and maybe even a little better. The gene has been expressed in the platform, in this case, a messenger RNA.
So you see, as we've gone to the ghost of vaccines past, no placebo groups, easily having vaccine programs that kill children, approving vaccines that cause heart attacks, and just seeing does our post-marketing surveillance capture it, even though none of the frontline doctors have been told it causes heart attacks. Do you see the danger that sits in our future? And now, these people that have rushed every vaccine we use up until this point are now hyper-speeding towards a coronavirus vaccine in a speed that Tony Fauci describes the fastest we have ever seen.
The experimental RNA vaccine manufactured by Moderna is funded by both Bill Gates and the NIHID, which Fauci leads. Now, this vaccine has been fast-tracked, removing regulatory restrictions, and this type of RNA vaccine has never been before used on humans. Now, typically, vaccines take years to develop, not weeks. And they are already testing this brand new RNA vaccine on humans. Fauci's NIH are the ones conducting the vaccine test right now. And by the way, they skipped the usual animal testing phase and started testing on human guinea pigs. Now, Gates and Fauci also have another financial relationship. In October of 2019, Fauci announced a partnership between the Gates Foundation and Fauci's agency, in which they both pledged to spend $100 million each to research gene-based therapies into HIV and sickle cell disease.
We need vaccines for a lot of things, not just epidemics. We need a HIV vaccine, a tuberculosis vaccine, a malaria vaccine. All of those things are in the works, and you know, over the next decade, I think most of those we'll get solutions for.
Now, Bill Gates has been doing the rounds recently on a media campaign, beginning with a Reddit Ask Me Anything, where Gates called for a national tracking system for the coronavirus. Many were shocked, and some asked, did Gates slip up and let the cat out of the bag? And in my personal belief, the answer is no, because only a few days later, Gates upped the ante and openly called and talked about a vaccine certificate, which would be recognized internationally. So in other words, a global vaccine ID. These statements are not a slip of the tongue, in my opinion. This is a public rollout of a plan that has been in the works for a long time.
Eventually, what we'll have to have is certificates of who's a recovered person, who's a vaccinated person, because you don't want people moving around the world where you'll have some countries that won't have it under control, sadly. You don't want to completely block off the ability for those, you know, people to go there and come back and move around.
Now, if you'd seen my previous reports here, you would not be surprised by this. I published a report before the announcements were made by Bill Gates, and I predicted that this would be the outcome and is very likely tied into Gates' coronavirus at-home testing kits because they are collecting your DNA during these tests. Now, I show in detail how Gates currently is working with the United Nations to establish the UN's Sustainable Development Goal 16.9 under the UN's 2030 agenda to provide a digital ID for every man, woman, and child on the planet by the year 2030 through their UN and Gates joint program known as ID 2020. Gates openly talks about vaccinating everyone on the planet before life can return to, quote, normal.
The ultimate solution, the only thing that really lets us go back completely to normal and feel good about sitting in a stadium with lots of other people, is to create a vaccine and not just take care of our country, but take that vaccine out to the global population. But what does opening up look like? You know, which activities have, like schools, have such benefit and can be done in a way that the risk of transmission is very low?
Yeah.
And which activities, like mass gatherings, may be, in a certain sense, more optional. And so until you're widely vaccinated, those may not come back at all.
And it's not just Gates saying this. His little buddy Fauci has also implied this. The Australian Prime Minister has stated that life will not return to normal until there is a vaccine. Johnson & Johnson, who participated in the UN Gates Event 201 pandemic simulation, is preparing mass vaccines. Denmark has mandated vaccines through an emergency order. And in Italy, you may have to have a COVID pass to prove you have a marker of immunity. Just to return to work after this lockdown.
Immunity passports could speed up return to work after COVID-19. And this case, this report coming from The Guardian about a week ago, this case, they're not talking about immunity passports to travel internationally. No, this is to go to work, to access public transit, to do anything in the public sphere is going to require an immunity passport to show that you've got the antibodies or you've got the vaccine. If you've taken the vaccine, you'll get your immunity passport and you'll be allowed to travel, to work, to make money in order to put food on your family's table. So it's completely opt-in, guys. You can choose if you want to do this. It's just if you want access to anything in the public sphere, you're going to have to take the shot.
Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Welcome to Event 201.
I find this extremely fascinating because this pandemic simulation exercise of the coronavirus took place about 6 weeks before the first illness from the coronavirus was actually reported in Wuhan, China. Now, that is one hell of a coincidence if you ask me. I'm not sure if you believe in that sort of thing. Now, the members of the Emergency Epidemic Board in this simulation consist of representatives from major banks, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Johnson & Johnson, logistical powerhouses, the media, as well as officials from China and America's Center for Disease Control, just to name a few. Now, let's take a quick look at how this simulation began.
Hello, everyone. I'm Anita Cicero, Deputy Director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. And today, I will be your Master of Ceremonies for Event 201. On behalf of our center and our partners, the World Economic Forum and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, today's scenario is going to simulate meetings of a multi-stakeholder group called the Pandemic Emergency Board. This board has been urgently convened by the World Economic Forum, and Johns Hopkins has been asked to moderate the board meetings and provide expertise during the board's deliberations. The mission of the Pandemic Emergency Board is to provide recommendations to deal with the major global challenges arising in response to an unfolding pandemic. The board's recommendations are aimed at top decision makers in national governments, global business, and international organizations.
The scenario you will be presented with this morning could easily become one a shared reality one day. I fully expect that we will be confronted by a fast-moving, highly lethal pandemic of a respiratory pathogen.
a step up from the part of the government on enforcement actions against fake news.
We're at a moment where the social media platforms have to step forward and recognize the moment to assert that they're a technology platform and not a broadcaster is over. They in fact have to be a participant in broadcasting accurate information and partnering with the scientific and health communities.
WHO right now is meeting with Google and all of the internet companies to say that only information coming from WHO and CDC about coronavirus should be shared and allowed on the internet.
Twitter have decided to take it upon themselves to delete a few tweets by Jair Bolsonaro because they believe that it is misinformation. As Glenn Greenwald says here, he was showing videos of himself going into crowds in Brazil, hyping hydrochloride as a cure and encouraging an end to isolation. And Twitter decided they were going to delete these tweets. Alex Jones got his app banned from the Google store for talking about this, for exposing the Dems blocking coronavirus treatments. Well, I mean, they did, didn't they? But I mean, they're just going to consider anything Alex Jones says to be misinformation and therefore gone. But the same thing is going to happen in the UK. There is a fake news crackdown by the UK government because this tyranny has not escaped our shores, of course.
The call to action that was issued as a result of this tabletop exercise that was held in New York in October of 2019, involving some of the very players who are now in the front lines of this fight against the coronavirus pandemic that they themselves were simulating. Amazing that they were able to foresee what was coming. And look, they had this perfectly amazing list of responses already waiting for something like this to come along so that they could shake their paper in the face of these world leaders and say, look, we told you so. Now we have the plan for exactly what you should do about this, including as point number 7 in that call to action makes very explicit, the crackdown on what is deemed to be mis- and disinformation by the authoritative sources in the fact-checking world, no doubt, about the pandemic outbreak. And what are we seeing right now? As I just went over with James Evan Pilato in New World Next Week, all of the big tech companies are now actively coordinating and collaborating with the U.S. government in order to crack down on coronavirus misinformation, which, oh, by the way, as a bug, Facebook just accidentally basically censored and blocked and removed every single article and post on coronavirus recently.
The line between disinformation and misinformation is not always an easy one to find.
But that was just a bug, folks. Don't worry, they're ironing out the wrinkles in that system, and it will all be better soon, once they have the right censorship things dialed in properly. And of course, the WHO director did come out and say that what we're dealing with is not just a pandemic, it's an infodemic. So this has already been seeded into the popular imagination, and it was already sitting there waiting to be enacted by the Event 201 crew, who are the very ones coordinating the response to the real-life version of what they simulated.
Like, and now here we are. You know, we didn't simulate this, we didn't practice. So both the health policies and economic policies, we find ourselves in uncharted territory.
Let's just rewind that real quick and hear that again.
You know, we didn't simulate this, we didn't practice. So both simulate this, we didn't practice. So both the
we didn't simulate this, we didn't practice this. Now everybody who's listening to this channel, even if you're new, I'm sure you've heard of Event 201, and you know that that is an outright lie. For those who are unaware, here we are at the centerforhealthsecurity.org/event201, and let's just read a little bit about this. The Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, in partnership with the World Economic Forum and, oh, look at this, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, hosted Event 201, a high-level pandemic exercise on October 18, 2019. So Gates is on BBC this morning claiming, we didn't prepare, we're underfunded, you know, I thought this was going to happen, but nobody listened to me, and we didn't simulate this, we didn't practice this, So, as he says, the health policies and economic policies, we find ourselves in uncharted territory. Guys, this is just like the 9/11 story, where the goal is to convince the public that the government was just kind of bumbling around and didn't know what was going to happen. And so nobody could have been prepared for this. Just like Condoleezza Rice after 9/11 said, oh, I don't think anybody could have imagined this happening, meaning could imagine that planes could crash into buildings, even though they also, just like Event 201, simulated hijacked aircraft flying into planes, flying into the buildings.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and their angle on this, the philanthropic organizations that were going to help to coordinate the international global response that will be necessary. This is, of course, what it always comes back to, because some people are saying this is the end of globalization as we've known it. This is going to upend everything. On the contrary, this is a fail-forward event in which the very globalist purveyors of the globalist ideology are going to push even further and even harder. We're going to need a global pandemic response agency that's going to be funded by all countries and is going to be able to subsume the national sovereignty of any given country as a result of what's happening right now. And that was, again, laid out by Bill Gates 5 years ago.
So we can have tools, but those tools need to be put into an overall global health system.
A global stockpile would certainly help ensure more rational and strategic allocation.
What we've seen work very well in the HIV field is, in fact, procurement through the Global Fund. So having a centralized mechanism, so financially able to procure on behalf of affected countries, okay, can be critical.
So at the moment, we want the funds, right? You need the money. So where's the money? So government kind of supplies some money. A lot of, you know, private sectors, you know, some are sitting here, you have some money. But now you need a really coordinated, centralized efforts.
The former Prime Minister of the UK, Gordon Brown, recently urged world leaders to create a, quote, temporary form of global government to tackle the twin medical and economic crises, calling for a global governance task force, which would include the G20, the United Nations, the World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund.
Temporary form of global government. That's going to just temporarily put all sorts of extraordinary powers in the hands of these international bodies that will have to be strengthened as a result of this. And just temporary, you know, until we can eradicate all disease and all threat of all pandemic from ever affecting humankind again. You know, just until that takes place, right? This is the crisis that they need to justify the response, the solution that they already have up their sleeve. Hey, what's the problem? Oh, global government, that's the solution.
My central message is clear. We are in an unprecedented situation and the normal rules no longer apply. People are suffering, sick, and scared. And current responses at the country level will not address the global scale and complexity of the crisis. But in managing this crisis, we also have a unique opportunity. Done right, we can steer the recovery towards a more sustainable and inclusive path. As we need to immediately move away from a situation where each country is undertaking its own health strategies to one that ensures in full transparency a coordinated global response, including helping countries that are less prepared to tackle the crisis. Governments must give the strongest support to the multilateral effort to fight the virus led by the World Health Organization, whose appeals must be fully met.
It should be noted Gates is the World Health Organization's second largest donor, second only to the US, but just above the entire United Kingdom.
I welcome the decision by G20 leaders to convene an emergency summit next week to respond to the epic challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic, and I look forward to taking part.
G20 summits are normally lavish set-piece events. This was last year in Osaka, Japan. But in the new realities of a closed-off world, the summit became a 90-minute video conference call.
新冠肺炎疫情正在全球蔓延，国际社会最需要的是坚定信心、齐心协力、团结应对，全面加强国际合作。 凝聚起战胜疫情强大合力，携手赢得这场人类同重大传染性疾病的斗争。国际社会应该加紧行动起来，坚决打好新冠肺炎疫情防控全球阻击战，遏制疫情蔓延势头。中方秉持人类命运共同体理念，
愿同各国分享防控有益做法，开展药物和疫苗联合研发。
病毒无国界，疫情是我们的共同敌人。各国必须携手拉起最严密的联防联控网络。
The United States is working with our friends and partners around the world to stop the spread of the virus and coordinate our efforts. We discussed how vitally important it is for all of our nations to immediately share information and data.
Governments need to be willing to do things that are out of their historical perspective. Or, for the most part, it's really a war footing that we need to be on.
This is, in effect, a government on a wartime footing.
We must act like any wartime government.
We must declare war on this virus.
We're at war. In a true sense, we're at war.
Compare this to World War II.
It can happen quickly, a Marshall-type plan, don't mean to say that exactly, but a Marshall plan that can go into effect can stimulate change very quickly.
I can tell you that martial law and the specter of martial law is very much in the air in the United States and elsewhere, reflected in any number of stories that are trending on the news pages right now, the mainstream news pages, about what is martial law and is martial law coming to America. For example, we can get this from Fox Business. What is martial law? Increase in COVID-19 related rules, curfews has led to circulation of rumors surrounding martial law. And it helpfully defines martial law as a term that describes the government order of replacing civil rule with the military in a time of war or emergency. Well, actually, for people who have been paying attention over the past 18 years, the national emergency that was declared on 9/11 has been renewed every single year by every single president since then. So there is a state of emergency.
Now, the epicenter of this outbreak, the city of Wuhan, has just handed over the first of two temporary hospitals to the Chinese military medical teams.
In response to the worsening situation and ahead of an anticipated nationwide curfew, the IDF entered its highest state of alert, which practically means the Israeli military's emergency preparedness for war.
The president of the region of Lombardy has said that he wants the military to be called in to enforce the lockdown, calling on people to stay at home. This is really the mantra that they're leading out to the public at large.
This morning, emergency measures in New York. The state's governor deploying the National Guard to New Rochelle, a suburb of New York City, in an effort to contain a coronavirus outbreak there.
The new era that we have stumbled into one way or another, and that era is now coming to fruition. And there are many different aspects of what's going on right now, and the very many different power grabs that are being taken by authoritarian structures all around the world. Just as after 9/11, every authoritarian in the world was happy to see that event occur in the sense that it gave them carte blanche to call all of their enemies terrorists and launch a war upon them. Well, now, the authoritarian structures around the world are benefiting from the massive power grab that is taking place right under our nose.
My God, we've now passed this emergency coronavirus legislation. This is now law, and or will be by the time you watch this video, probably. And man, this is just... I'm just blown away that this is something that we can do. So Matt Hancock, the health secretary, said that this will allow extraordinary measures never seen in peacetime in the UK. Jesus. It's cleared the House of Lords, it's going to happen. So it gives them, as they say, wide-ranging powers. Now, I'm not too worried about the workforce and the easing of pressure. It's the limiting of contact, the control of people's movements that I'm more concerned about. This really seems too far for me. I mean, they've got parts about controlling borders, sick pays, but the part that I think is most, honestly, just the bit that really struck at home to me was that the MPs are just like, this, I mean, we're all going to vote for this. We're going to allow this to go through. But this is really intense. I just can't get over it.
The UK is experiencing similar power grabs. So this new bill, which is HC122, or simply the coronavirus bill, allows police and officials to order anyone believed to be infected to undergo testing. Anyone believed to be infected to undergo testing. Pretty crazy stuff. Police, public health, and immigration officers will be able to detain people suspected of having COVID-19 and exact 1,000 pound fines for refusing tests under emergency powers that have been rolled out now by the UK government.
Australia has declared a state of emergency and has invoked these new powers in much the same way as Britain has. The formal declaration gives the government the power to close off cities or regions, impose curfews, and order people to quarantine if deemed necessary to contain the spread of the virus. This is terrifying. This is absolutely terrifying because, like, I don't think I actually know anyone with this virus. Like in Virginia, 25 people have died. Boom, entire state shut down. You know, Australia, boom, entire country now can be quarantined at the whim of the government. Just if they decide. Like, Australia has recorded 425 infections and 5 deaths. Boom, entire country. Entire country locked down. It's madness. Same in France, obviously, apart from those problematic gang-ridden areas, the areas where the diversity is, the police aren't going to enforce this on them. So, I mean, in one way, you could say this is a privilege, but, I mean, it might well be a giant curse. Who knows how bad the coronavirus becomes? But a regular French citizen can be fined €4,000 for repeatedly flouting this quarantine. Obviously, this is the same thing in Israel. Netanyahu, who was due to appear in court apparently, has decided to suspend courts, shut down the courts, and identify people who should be quarantined using data harvested from their phones. Wow. That's, like, come on. Like, you know, in Bolivia, they're delaying presidential elections and mandating a 14-day quarantine. And then you get Hungary. And Hungary decided to just go full-on dictatorship. Here's a quick summary of what's in it. State of emergency without time limit. The Liberal, according to the Guardian article I've got here as well, the Liberal Party was saying, well, look, we'll agree to this if you put the sunset clause in. No, the hell with your sunset clause. This isn't just going to expire after a year or 2 years or however long. This is a state of emergency without time limit and rule by decree. Parliament suspended. No elections. If you spread fake news and rumours, you get up to 5 years in prison. If you leave quarantine, up to 8 years in prison. This is mad. Like, this is full-on dictatorship.
Police are ramping up their crackdown on Sydney's parks and beaches, and you'll no longer escape with just a warning. Officers have handed the first fines to those not obeying the rules, and as you're about to see, everyone is a target.
Two young mums, one breastfeeding her baby, both of them just minding their business. They're locked in conversation with a police officer, and they find it hard to believe he is telling them to move on. But nobody was off limits, with police on a mission at Coogee Beach.
Go home, please. Just quick exercise around the block and then get home.
Reading the paper under a tree, tradies having their lunch. A mum sitting on a bench by herself told she has to leave too. Is this a police state or is it what the public needs to hear?
You can't stay on the green. Can you all go home? Can you all go home, please? It's not a holiday. It's a lockdown, which means you don't just come in sunbathe.
Gulo o Barilan o Patayan, I will not hesitate my soldiers to shoot you. Shoot them dead.
Oh my God!
Like something out of science fiction, this drone equipped with a megaphone hovers before a crowd, blaring a warning. The operator, a local traffic cop.
You, the handsome man with the telephone, where's your mask? Put it on.
Hey, you on the bike, put on your mask when you're in the street. Don't endanger your fellow citizens.
Deep State had the Rockefeller Foundation script a plan to introduce martial law and a permanent method for total control of the citizenry. In this plan that they disguised as an academic scenario, as they called it, the method they would use to gain complete prison-like control of the entire population.
Lockstep. And lockstep comes from a series of scenarios that were laid out by the Rockefeller Foundation in conjunction with the Global Business Network, and that were described in a document called Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development. And one of these scenarios that they were planning, again, on the records in 2010, was called Lockstep. And let me know if this sounds familiar to you. The document starts by noting that Lockstep is a scenario which involves a world of tighter top-down government control and more authoritarian leadership with limited innovation and growing citizen pushback. The pandemic also had a deadly effect on economies. International mobility of both people and goods screeched to a halt, debilitating industries like tourism and breaking global supply chains. Sounds familiar. Even locally, normally bustling shops and office buildings sat empty for months, devoid of both employees and customers. But even in developed countries, containment was a challenge. The United States' initial policy of strongly discouraging citizens from flying proved deadly in its leniency, accelerating the spread of the virus not just within the U.S., but across borders.
To keep new cases from entering our shores, we will be suspending all travel from Europe to the United States for the next 30 days.
We'll have the greatest number of confirmed coronavirus cases on Earth.
However, a few countries did fare better, China in particular. The Chinese government's quick imposition and enforcement of mandatory quarantine for all citizens, as well as its instant and near hermetic sealing off of all borders, saved millions of lives, stopping the spread of the virus far earlier than in other countries, and enabling a swift post-pandemic recovery.
We have been seeing the U.S. government, the World Health Organization, and the media praising the authoritarian measures taken by China in response to this outbreak.
I will praise China again and again because its actions actually helped in reducing the spread of coronavirus to other countries.
A phenomenal collective action and cooperation by the people of China to this response.
Now, China's decision to lock down the city of Wuhan, the epicenter of the COVID-19 outbreak, may have prevented more than 700,000 new cases.
Is total lockdown the cure for the coronavirus? The city at the center of China's crisis reports no new cases for the second day in a row. Should other cities follow Wuhan's lead and imprison millions of its people for weeks? And is China's experiment the model for us all?
China's government was not the only one that took extreme measures to protect its citizens from risk and exposure. During the pandemic, national leaders around the world flexed their authority and imposed airtight rules and restrictions, from the mandatory wearing of face masks to body temperature checks at the entries to communal spaces like train stations and supermarkets.
Because he's putting something between your eyes.
One more time.
You don't have a fever.
I don't know what. Reach low again.
There you go.
One more time.
Even after the pandemic faded, this more authoritarian control and oversight of citizens and their activities stuck and even intensified. In order to protect themselves from the spread of increasingly global problems, from pandemics and transnational terrorism to environmental crises and rising poverty, leaders around the world took a firmer grip on power.
And so it's just, I mean, I'm just like, this is really bad precedent. It's a really bad precedent to be able to give government the powers to be able to do this because of a virus. We are moving into a dystopian framework where something terrible could emerge. And it's just better to not have the groundwork laid. It is just better for us to not have the ability for something terrible to come up and have the constitutional protections, the liberties that we have fought for 1,000 years to get. We can't just give them up in the face of a virus.
It is nonetheless a fact that in any time of great crisis or adversity, a trick that your own brain will pull on you in order to give you a false sense of security is to normalize the situation. Oh, there's no crisis, there's no emergency, everything will go back to normal in a few weeks, and we'll continue on with our lives as they were before. Do not normalize what is happening here. This is not normal. Medical martial law, troops on the street, internal passports and checkpoints, orders to shelter in place, permission to leave your home, enforced quarantines and isolation, business closures, nationalization of industry, collapses of economies. This is not normal. So do not normalize. Do not give in to the temptation to normalize the absolute craziness that is happening right now. Realize that this is the perfectly logical end result of decades of carefully laid infrastructure for the implementation of a medical martial law situation. And what is happening right now are powers being accrued by authoritarians that will never be relinquished. Once these powers are put in place and the precedent is there, even if the emergency is released and everything goes back to normal a few weeks from now, it will be a new normal.
It sounds like little by little Beijing and maybe the entire country starting to return to normal. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. I would call it not normal, but maybe the new normal.
As we wake up to a new normal today and life is slowly grinding to a halt,
Americans are facing a new normal.
This will be the new normal.
A new normal in which any authoritarian at any time will be able to press the panic button to cause pandemonium in the public and to reclaim all of these emergency, temporary measures that are being claimed right now. This is a big deal. Centralization of power and control in the hands of a very few oligarchical elitists who are using a technocratic enslavement grid to impose a global, worldwide tyranny, aka a new world order. When we start to understand what this agenda is really about, which is total and complete control over every aspect of every human being on the planet, their movement, their actions, their activities, their transactions, their interactions with people, down to the individual level, the complete and utter control of your life in every regard, well, guess what? That is being enabled on the back of this pandemic scare.
You know, I think it's too bad in a way that we have had to have these epidemics to get us to move.
It's just one more way of reducing your liberty and reminding you that they can fuck with you anytime they want, as long as you put up with it. As long as you put up with it. Which means, of course, anytime they want. Because that's what Americans do now. They're always willing to trade away a little of their freedom in exchange for the feeling, the illusion of security. What we have now is a completely neurotic population obsessed with security and safety and crime and drugs and cleanliness and hygiene and germs. There's another thing, germs. Where did this sudden fear of germs come from? In this country, have you noticed this? The media constantly running stories about all the latest infections, salmonella, E. coli, hantavirus, bird flu, and Americans are, they panic easily, so now everybody's running around scrubbing this and spraying that and overcooking their food and repeatedly washing their hands, trying to avoid all contact with germs. It's ridiculous, and it goes to ridiculous lengths. In prisons, before they give you a lethal injection, they swab your arm with alcohol.
Just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government
took them away. And rights aren't rights if someone can take them away. They're privileges. That's all we've ever had in this country is a bill of temporary privileges. And if you read the news even badly, you know that every year the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter.